Welcome to the Painting Lines Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things tennis. Join Eric and Aiden in their discussion for updates on news and pop culture, and from hot takes to betting, they've got you covered.
Ready? Hey guys, welcome back to Painting Lines. In our last episode, we interviewed a tennis agent, and if you haven't listened yet, I highly recommend checking that one out. It was a fun one, ton of good insight. And this week we will be breaking down Indian Wells and the Miami Open, also known as the Sunshine Double. You know, these are two of my favorite tournaments outside the majors. They're both in the US, a lot of fun kind of atmosphere going around. And for those of you that are just listening, not watching, I got my Miami Open t-shirt on. So Aiden, what are your thoughts just initially on these two tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're really fun tournaments. Obviously, they kick off the Masters 1000s for the year. They're back-to-back weekends, both in, I mean, usually great weather conditions. Not this year where there was a lot of delays in Miami, but usually it's just beautiful, sunny weather. And I think they're just a great way to kick off the year for the Masters 1000 tournaments. I also have fond memories of like watching Federer in 2017 win the Sunshine Double, which was obviously a pretty cool moment to see. It's kind of interesting actually, because last year and this year we saw Alcaraz win Indian Wells both times, and he had already won Miami in the past, but then he wasn't able to complete the Sunshine Double, unfortunately. But maybe in the future we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I feel like Alcaraz almost, it's surprising because he almost plays in front of a home crowd in Miami, just with like a Spanish presence down there in South Florida. So I feel like he's good. Yeah, he'll do it eventually. And obviously Indian Wells is kind of his backyard now, 2 years in a row.
Yeah. Back to back, baby.
Back to back. Yeah. So let's just hop into Indian Wells real quick. Yeah. We mentioned it before, Alcaraz defending his title. First person to do that since Djokovic in 2016. Dude, I don't know. What are you thinking? Like, Djokovic wise, is he done? Is he going to do that again? I don't know.
I mean, it's crazy to think about Djokovic being the last guy to do that, because you'd think in between there would be a time when someone won it back to back. But I guess it's a place where you get kind of a more variety of winners because of how fast and how kind of volatile it can be playing on those courts. But in terms of Djokovic, I think it's tough to speculate, because obviously last year, if you look at his season, he played in Australia, but then when he came back at the beginning of the clay season, because obviously he couldn't play in these tournaments last year, he didn't have the greatest comeback then either. He lost to Musetti. He lost to Lajovic. So obviously this is a pretty bad loss for him, losing as early as he did in Indian Wells, but I don't know if we can make an assumption about where he is overall based on that. His last two matches that he lost were against Sinner, who, as we've seen, is completely on fire. And he lost to Nardi, which isn't a great loss for him. But obviously, I don't think we can make a massive assumption based off of it.
Yeah, I agree. Let's stick on Djokovic here for a second. Even though he took the L against Nardi, I think he took another L too with that controversial point where he just kind of stopped in the middle. I don't know, man. I think he's completely in the wrong there. Even if Nardi stops in the middle of the point, if you finish out the point, it's still your point. Like, why would that distract you? And then I think it was a bad look because he didn't let it go. He kind of made a scene about it. And then after the match, he did say something to Nardi, a young kid who just, you know, beat one of the goats of the sport and just kind of had to ruin it for him.
Yeah, it kind of ruined his moment. Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. And then people were kind of on him for, he was like chilling with Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors after too. But I think that's less of a problem. The bigger problem was like just the outburst that he had.
Yeah. I mean, Djokovic has his outbursts here and there, but yeah, I definitely think that the Warriors thing is much less of a big deal. I mean, he can do what he wants. I mean, yeah, we've right. seen plenty of tennis players hang out with celebrities. So it's not like a big deal there.
I know, people just get pissed. Like, oh, he should, like, what do you expect? That he loses and he just wants to sit in a dark, silent room? Like, let the guy live, too. They're mad because he lost, especially to Nardi, and then he's out just celebrating.
Yeah, it's the whole, you look at someone like the Michael Jordan or the Tom Brady, and the funny thing is that Djokovic is exactly like those guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at how well Djokovic has performed. He's the greatest of all time. And people are still want to be like, he's not working hard enough. What? That's crazy.
I know. But kind of disappointing. First time back since 2019. And then, you know, loses this and then has to pull out of Miami with an injury.
Was he injured, though? I think he pulled out of Miami just because I read something that said he had to balance his private and public life or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we'll get into this a little later.
Yeah. But jumping back to Alcaraz winning the title, he also obviously on his run to the title beat Sinner. So that's a pretty big deal for 2024 at least.
Yeah, this is positive for the sport that we're getting a nice rivalry. You know, it's tied up at 4-4 now. This is huge. We finally get that Federer-Nadal kind of matchup here.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of the heir apparent to that rivalry is Alcaraz-Sinner.
And very similar, kind of on the playing style, but more so the like geographical comparisons too. Obviously, Alcaraz being from Spain, same as Nadal, and then Sinner being from Northern Italy, like very close to Switzerland.
And I also think you almost get a little bit of the personas. I think Alcaraz does have a more fiery persona. He's engaging with the audience. And Sinner, you see a little bit more of those quiet fist pumps.
Yeah, totally. I actually watched an old clip. I think it was the first time Federer and Nadal played each other was at the Miami Open in 2004. And Nadal ended up beating him. And it was 17-year-old Nadal. It was so fun to watch him just running all over the court, flying, like jumping in the air, fist pumping, yelling. Like he was exploding. You kind of forget that, like seeing him now.
Exactly. Yeah. Cause you're like, oh, this guy was playing at 17. Now you're watching him at 36. Like, oh, this is a completely different player.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, speaking on this rivalry, so it's 4-4 now, and Alcaraz obviously only got to beat Sinner this year, but it makes sense to an extent that Alcaraz would be the guy to beat him in my mind, because Alcaraz has kind of a volatile style that he makes so many shots where you're like, this is unsustainable. No one can do this consistently. And then Alcaraz does it consistently. And that's how you have to be able to play this year to be able to beat Sinner.
Yeah, I'm curious to see Sinner's game, like to see if the success is going to translate into the clay court season, because obviously Alcaraz kind of has the upper hand there. So I don't know if we'll see Alcaraz kind of benefit from this in the next few months or if Sinner can kind of keep the rivalry pretty even.
Yeah, because obviously we had Sinner losing relatively early at the French last year to Altmaier, right? So that's something to watch, seeing how he can translate his game over to the clay.
Yeah. Now let's get into the Americans at Indian Wells. Pretty good turnout from the bunch, you know, starting with Tommy Paul making the semis.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, very solid run from him. He's played really well so far this year overall, I think. I mean, obviously, he's won a title. He made another final. And then he made this run in Indian Wells. Unfortunately, didn't translate into Miami because he got injured, even though he was ahead in that match, which I think is one of the worst feelings, because that really shows you that it's a real injury. Because some of the times people get a little injured and they're down in a match and then they pull out and you're like, well, if they were ahead, they would have kept going. It's not that bad of an injury. Here, it's like he's up a set and they're on serve and he gets injured and has to pull out. And that was a tough look. And especially because of, like I said, how well his year seems to be going.
Oh, I know. And I thought that he was going to kind of eclipse Fritz as the top American position, but doesn't seem like that's going to be the way, because he's going to be out for, I'd say, at least a month and a half, 2 months, ankle injury.
Yeah. I think Tommy Paul was on that track to maybe eclipse Fritz, and now it's kind of derailed.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Fritz, I always expect him to play well at Indian Wells, just kind of because it's his backyard and he's won the tournament back in 2022. Kind of a tough loss against Runa this year, especially having a match point too in the second. But I'm not going to lie, I did snag Runa plus 500 in that second set when he was down a game too. So I was on the edge of my seat yelling at the TV watching. It was so fun to watch and made some
rooting money against Fritz. That's got to feel bad.
Dude, I'm such a big Runa fan now.
That's funny. I feel like on earlier episodes, we were a little bit of a harsh on Runa. And now we're Now we're all on board with him.
I was going to say, I'll admit I'm a hater. Or I was a hater. Sorry. I've converted. I think I like that attitude. He's like Bruno against the world. I think it was watching him on Breakpoint. Just the fact that like, the reason why he acts like such a dick is because of the fact that he wants to win so badly, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's a bad person. I think he's just got that kind of Djokovic mentality, Tom Brady mentality, where it's, you know, I don't care if I hurt your feelings. I'm going to do the best I can.
100%. Speaking of another young guy, what'd you think of Shelton's run here?
Shelton had a good run, man. Round of 16. I don't know too much. Like, I didn't really expect him to beat Sinner. Honestly, I think he played him well. I think it was a tight first set. That actually went back and forth. I think he went down a break early and then he broke back. I wouldn't really expect a whole much. I think it was a good run for what it was, if that makes sense. Round of 16, lost to Sinner. Like, what are you going to do about that?
I completely agree. I mean, I think anyone coming up against Sinner right now is just a death to any sort of run because Sinner's just feels unbeatable. And yeah, I'd say Shelton played him pretty well. Kind of like I was saying with Alcaraz, Shelton has that really explosive game, which I think is what's required right now to beat Sinner. We'll look at some of these matches later on. The guys didn't play explosive enough to beat him. And if you play a relatively normal baseline game with nothing crazy, you're not going to beat him this year. He's just playing at too high of a level.
Not only are you not going to beat him, but you're going to get smoked by him.
Oh, 100%. Jeez.
It's funny. I feel like we were talking about Alcaraz the same way we're talking about Sinner last year.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the beginning of Alcaraz's year last year and you compare it to how Sinner's playing right now, it's honestly kind of similar. I mean, Alcaraz started off his year coming off of an injury and won like three or four tournaments in a row, had like two losses, lost like to Nori and maybe to Medvedev. Oh no, he lost to Sinner in Miami. And he looked just insane. And it's funny because at that point, it was kind of the opposite of the Sinner, where Alcaraz looked unbeatable and then he lost to Sinner and it was like, oh, this is a massive win for Sinner. Now you look at Indian Wells and Alcaraz beats Sinner and it's like, oh, this is a big win for Alcaraz because Sinner now looks unbeatable. So yeah, like you said, we were talking a very similar way about Alcaraz as we are about Sinner right now.
Yep. Exciting things for the sport. That's all I can say.
100%.
All right. And how about our boy Tiafoe, the big foe?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
it's not much to say here, in my opinion. I mean, lost to Tsitsipas.
That's a tough loss.
Yeah, it's a tough opponent.
It's
to
a
play.
Respect. Yeah, respectable opponent.
Tsitsipas is not like a walkover. It's not like like it's not like he lost to Nardi like Djokovic did, and everyone's like, "How did you lose to this guy?" But I definitely feel like hasn't been playing ever since 2022. He hasn't been playing at that same level he was, and it seems like he's just sliding a little bit.
Right. I mean, if we're going to take this a couple years ago, this loss to Tsitsipas, it would be, oh, yeah, definitely, you know, expected. But if you're going to progress as a player, like as he should, then he should be able to beat Tsitsipas. But I don't know. Maybe he's just remaining stagnant. Something will change. I feel like he's got to get back to the drawing board.
Yeah. Then again, I mean, even at his peak, I would say a Tsitsipas match is going to be a tough one either way. Like losing to Tsitsipas, I don't think is that bad of a sign, but I think there have been some negative signs in other tournaments that show that he's not progressing like he would hope to.
Yeah, no, agreed. And how about the B delay at Indian Wells?
Crazy.
Did you see that? That
crazy.
Was so funny. I was actually at the Big East Championship, where they playing Creighton Providence basketball game, and I was trying to watch the match on my phone. And I was just, I'm like, why is this delayed? This is so weird. And then, because I couldn't listen to it, I'm just watching the thing and I just see all these B's. And then I started reading into why it was delayed. And it was a B delay. Can you believe that?
Crazy.
That is
it,
so,
I mean,
so
save
funny.
The B's, right? It's a positive sign that we have a lot of B's out there, right?
Yeah. I wonder what they did to the B's. I feel like they exterminated them, though.
Hopefully they just moved them. That's the hope.
Yeah. Lance Davis was the B keeper who came in. Apparently it was a big hit. People were
emergency beekeeper.
Yeah. You gotta have one on the payroll, man.
Exactly.
I feel like in Miami, that would happen with mosquitoes or something.
Oh,
you would need
If imagine had to get delayed because of mosquitoes, that would be insane.
Oh yeah, there was a pretty cool bird flying around Miami though.
That was pretty funny. They were like, "Oh, he almost just hit Medvedev in the head."
That was the most exciting thing of the match.
Oh my god! Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So the delay actually lasted longer than the match. Fun fact: the match was only 1 hour 27. Alcaraz went to work, and the delay was almost 2 hours, like 1 hour 50 minutes.
That feels bad.
Yeah.
It's like the bees lasted longer than I did.
Oh, I know. And then one more point or one more highlight I want to take away from Indian Wells. Shelton had 150 mile an hour serve.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was obviously the fastest of the tournament. And I did some research and it was the 15th fastest recorded serve of all time. And it got me thinking. So how many other current players like can get up there? And I saw two who are currently on tour who are tied at 12th. And I was wondering if you could guess who they are.
Is 150 the fastest he's ever hit it?
Yeah. But two players, actually three, but two relevant ones that are on tour currently.
I would
guess. Like 152 and they're at 12th.
Hurkacz
is one.
Zverev?
Good guess, but not Zverev. It was, do you want to keep going? All right.
Can I get
one more?
You're
not going to get it. Yeah, you can get one more. You're not going to get it.
I'm not going to get it.
151 miles an hour.
Eubanks.
No.
Bublik.
No.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Alexei Poprin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. Kind of surprising, huh?
I did not know he hit his serve that fast.
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah, we got a little sidetracked there, but still fun topic.
Yeah, 100%. You ready to hop into the Miami Open?
Yeah, let's do it. I was a little bit disappointed just in Miami in general because of the weather. Like, I feel like it was very hyped up and I was bummed I couldn't go because I usually go to this tournament every year from Fort Lauderdale, but couldn't make it out there. And I'm kind of glad I didn't just because of the rain.
Yeah, that would have been a bummer to show up hoping for like beautiful weather and all of a sudden it's raining, rain delay all day. Like, this is just terrible. But yeah, I mean, we've mentioned this already, but Sinner just crushed this tournament, moved to number two in the world, which is obviously a career high for him. But if you look at the year-to-date rankings, he really seems primed to go to number one in the world at some point because he's just so far ahead of everyone in 2024 so far.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, we'll see if the clay court season slows him down.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know.
You want to talk a little bit about his run here?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, he absolutely cruised. So the only three sets, he had a relatively easy, I think, like beginning easy draw or run. Mm-hmm. His only three setter was against Griekspoor in the second round. Everything else, two sets, even the final. It's kind of crazy that what he did to Medvedev. I feel like that was the biggest story of the tournament. I mean, after what he did to Medvedev, I kind of expected what we saw in the final against Dimitrov.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the craziest matches. I almost decided to put that for my match of the week because of how lopsided it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because
domination.
It was a match you maybe should go back and watch the highlights of just to watch how Sinner made Medvedev look like he didn't belong on the court with him. Mm-hmm. Medvedev looked completely lost. And I think even more than the final, Medvedev looked lost because he kept looking up at his box like, what can I do? I don't know what I can change. I'm going to try to move back. I'm going to try to move forward. I'm going to try to come to the net more. And nothing worked. He tried to play his game and Sinner beat him at it. He tried to play a different game that Sinner wasn't expecting. Sinner beat him at it. And Medvedev was just so flustered, it looked like, that by the end of the match, it looked like he'd almost given up.
I know. And it was just like brute force too. Cause you know how Medvedev's the type of player that he will absorb pace and he'll hit with you. Sinner's pace was overpowering Medvedev. When he was on the baseline, Medvedev couldn't hang with him, which says a lot because a guy like Medvedev can usually, you know, he's a wall out there. He's known for playing good defense. And like you said, just couldn't do anything.
Yeah, no, I mean, how many of those rallies were there where they were just hitting backhand to backhand and then Sinner would win the rally from backhand to backhand? Medvedev is one of the best backhands on tour, but now looking at Sinner's backhand, it looks like he has maybe one of the best backhands on tour because he was dominating people with it.
Yeah, no, I know. And then he was also hitting winners from behind the baseline too, which is insane. I feel like being on the other end of that, when someone bombs a winner on you, like from a couple feet behind the baseline, it's kind of one of those where you're just like, well, shrug it off, like almost laugh about it.
Yeah.
I mean, do anything about it.
I mean, looking at that final, like I was saying before the match, I was like, I know what he's going to do is he's going to try to just pound it to Dimitrov's backhand. But Dimitrov's strategy has to be in this match, go forehand to forehand against one of the best forehands on tour and hope that Sinner's forehand is going to be too explosive on the day and that he's going to hit a bunch of errors. Did not work out for him at all.
Oh, I know. And I feel like in that match, Dimitrov had some nice winners, some nice backhand winners down the line. But did you notice every time he tried to come to the net, he was unsuccessful? Not every time, but I felt like that's a pretty common Dimitrov strategy. He's good at constructing points and then finishing them up at the net. But Sinner was passing him left and right. And it was almost like I'm the type of person, I love watching great points where the person finishes and wins the point, the person who volleys. But I was super entertained watching Sinner pass Dimitrov left and right. It was,
well, he hit some passing shots that just seemed unreal. Yeah. Like it seemed
some
like
Alcaraz
Dimitrov had,
type.
Exactly, Alcaraz or Djokovic type of shots where it looked like Dimitrov had perfectly set up the point to put it away. And then Sinner hits a shot where you're like, how did he just do that? And comes out and wins the point.
Yeah. I want to touch on Sinner's serving too. I don't know if you noticed, I feel like it got a lot better.
Oh, I mean, I think this whole year it's been way better than it was like early last year. I mean, we talked about it with Parth and Quinn when they were on. Remember, they were talking about how Sinner was changing his serve motion and it was drastically increasing his percentage made. And I think we're seeing him reap the benefits of that now.
Yeah, in the first set, he won 100% of first serve points.
Insane.
In that final.
Yeah, and he was doing that in the second set too, I think. I think he was doing that second set too until like the fourth or fifth game.
Yeah. No, I mean, it must be nice to just be able to serve your way out of trouble.
Yeah.
And yeah, because he would go down love 30 and then hit two aces.
Yeah. Or hit two strong first serves that he was able to just finish out. It was interesting watching this match because you looked at Sinner and he felt so much like he's never going to miss.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Dimitrov, you were kind of every single shot, you were like, is he going to miss this one?
Yeah.
Is he going to miss this one? Because Dimitrov had to play outside of himself to beat Sinner. He had to go for way more winners and way more like risky shots. And I think you saw that in the stats because Dimitrov did have more winners, I think, than Sinner, but he also had way more unforced errors.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, overall though, what do you think? Successful tournament for Dimitrov? Dude's 32.
Yeah. It's
like, what do you think?
It's tough. I mean, it is a successful tournament. I think from an outsider's perspective, he beat Hurkacz, he beat Alcaraz, he beat Zverev. That's an incredible job. And making the final, it feels bad for him because he's been so close recently. He made that Paris Masters final and lost to Djokovic. Now he makes another Masters 1000 final, loses again. It feels bad as him, but overall, I think it was a successful tournament. I mean, think of how great he must have felt after that semifinal when he moved up to number 9 in the world and was back in the top 10 for the first time since 2018.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of number 9, it was super funny. For one of the media days, I don't remember if it was Miami or Indian Wells, but they were interviewing Tsitsipas and they asked him, oh, so this is the first time in, you know, however long that a one-handed backhand is not in the top 10. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the shot? Do you think it's kind of something in the past, a relic? And he goes, oh, just wait 3 weeks and there'll be one back in the top 10. As if it was going to be him, and it ends up being Dimitrov, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, but I mean, that's just the most unexpected thing. I mean, who would have predicted that Dimitrov would be in the top 10 before Tsitsipas?
Oh, I know. And I think it's the most Tsitsipas answer, too, to say that he's, oh, just wait 3 weeks, and then it's just not him.
100%.
Hey, I'll wait 1 week, Steph.
Exactly, exactly. But yeah, I mean, overall, I'm really impressed with Dimitrov right now. I really want to see him get lucky with a run, because obviously he didn't get lucky with who he had to play in this tournament. Hurkacz, Alcaraz, Zverev, Sinner. That's not very easy for anyone to win those four in a row. But I think, honestly, we could see him win a big tournament if he gets a little bit of a lucky draw and someone knocks out Sinner before the final.
Yeah, I know. That's great. So his last Masters 1000s title was 2017.
I think that's his only Masters 1000 title too, right?
Yeah. All right, another takeaway. Let's talk about Rublev. Man, what's going on with him? This is a guy who used to be a consistent quarterfinalist, semifinalist. He would make deep runs in tournaments. Now this is his second early exit in a row.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I think two early exits, we can't make a generalization based off, right? Because I looked back at like his last 6 months.
Right.
And honestly, it's really hard to make a general statement about him.
Mm-hmm.
He'll go three tournaments in a row where he plays great, makes the semis or the final, only loses to a guy that's also in the top 10. And then you go to the next tournament and he loses in the first round to a guy like Hanfman he lost to. This was earlier in the year. And you're like, how'd that happen, dude? You just made the final of the tournament before and now you lose to this guy? And then he'll go to the next tournament and he'll lose again in the first round. You're like, oh, I guess he's just really inconsistent. I think what makes him unique is that he'll have not just a tournament where he has a flash of greatness. It'll be like, oh, he'll go on a 2 month spree where he's really solid. And then he'll lose early three times in a row. So it's not like a tournament by tournament. It's like a longer period of inconsistency.
Yeah, he ebbs and flows. Exactly. I feel like, I mean, it's got to be his mentality. It's not a playing thing. It's, you know, the type of guy who gets defaulted from a match for cussing out a line judge.
Exactly. Like, yeah, I mean,
it fits the description that he's not doing too well since.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows, I think, that he has the level of play to make the quarters of a Grand Slam. But he just sometimes isn't mentally all there.
It is a little concerning, though, that we have clay court season coming up and he's not the best on clay. And he's, you know, had a kind of a rough stint the last 2 weeks. So he's not coming in with momentum. He's coming into a surface that isn't his best, already a leg behind everyone else.
Then again, he did win Monte Carlo last year. So
He did.
Maybe we'll see a return to form there.
I hope so, because I miss seeing him deep in the tournaments.
Yeah, just pounding that forehand.
Yeah, I'm saying I miss seeing him. It's been four weeks. All right, yeah, two exactly. tournaments.
Exactly. But still, I miss him since, what, the Australian Open or what?
Yeah, well, those Masters tournaments are long, man, 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a mini Grand Slam, right?
It is. All right, well, Nishikori was back briefly.
Yeah, I mean, tough return to be like, oh, I'm back, guys, and then just be out in the first round.
I know.
But, I mean, it'd be cool to see him back on the tour. It's kind of a blast from the past. Get back to sort of the big four type of era. Guys like him, guys like Cilic, Raonic.
Yeah, I love how you said big four. You are a big Sir Andy fan.
Well, obviously, it's the big four. Yeah. He was there in all the tournaments. He may not have won as many, he was there.
You see Dimitrov's comment? There was a reporter and they asked, so like, yeah, so you started your career off playing against the big three, and he corrected, he goes, the big four, don't forget Andy.
Well, yeah, because I mean, if you look at like the general tournaments, Murray was at that level. It's just he didn't find the same level of Grand Slam success as the other guys.
Yeah, no, I know. That would be fun to see a little like comeback tour from all the older guys.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, 30, I mean,
30
think about,
plus.
Think about Monfils. I mean, Monfils was like, I'm going to retire last year. He's played, I think, better. I think he's played overall better since he made that comment than he had like the past 2 years before that.
Yeah. And Stan's kind of, you know, somewhat relevant now.
I mean, he's playing, I think, tomorrow, right? In Estoril.
I was going to bet on him, but he's so heavily favored. It's not even worth it. He's like minus 205.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I did see also that Team won his first ATP tour level match this year. He lost, I think, his first two against he lost the one to Nadal, which is crazy. in Nadal's, like, one of Nadal's two matches he's played.
Yeah.
And then he lost to FAA in that five setter at the Australian Open.
Yeah. Yeah.
So not the greatest start, but now, I mean, hopefully he can get a second one and build some momentum, but we'll see what happens.
Well, speaking of momentum, I feel like the Americans just lost it in Miami.
Like, oh, 100%.
You alluded to this earlier, but Paul, very disappointing with the ankle injury, especially after being up a set. What else? Fritz, first loss to Sabo with Wild. But yeah, and then Tiafo losing in the first round to O'Connell. So just, oh, and then Shelton, second round to Musetti.
Yeah, but like Musetti's good, like a good player too. Like, I mean, not to say the other guys aren't good players.
Yeah.
But Musetti's like a top 20 level almost guy.
Yeah.
Sabo with Wild and O'Connell aren't really at that level, at least yet in their careers.
No, definitely not.
So I think Shelton, obviously not what he was hoping for out of this tournament. I was going to say. But like, not as disappointing as seeing Fritz and Tiafo go out in the first round.
Yeah, I know. Especially, you know, Fritz actually just moved to Miami.
Oh, yeah. So
it's his
home tournament now. And then just
another just unusual thing that happens, a Casper Ruud outburst about no cold water, no towels, like changing in a trailer. Very out of character for him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's the type of guy where it's like, you can push him, but then at a certain point, he's going to snap. And I mean, based on what he's saying, like, those seem like the bare minimum. Cold water, towels, these aren't difficult things for a tournament to have, especially a tournament that has the amount of money that the Miami Open has. Like, you would expect they can treat their players pretty well, given how much they're probably giving in prize money and how much they're receiving in ticket sales. Like, they have the money to give people cold water and towels, and the fact they aren't is just insane.
Oh, 100%. I agree. And the reason why is, I actually looked into this. So Stephen Ross, owner of the Dolphins, he bought the Miami Open. He's the one who moved it from Key Biscayne, like the Sony Ericsson Open, to the Hard Rock. And he's running it like a business. Like, for him, it is solely a, you know, P&L thing. So he's cutting costs. He's selling stakes in the tournament too, so people can buy in. So you want to like boost the value of the tournament. It's not like Indian Wells where it just stays like that all year round. There's no permanent tennis infrastructure there. Played at a football stadium with just kind of tennis courts popped up in the parking lot. Not to say it's like tennis courts in the parking lot. They did a great job of doing it, but it's just a tough experience for the players because they feel like they're the ones putting their bodies on the line, like putting on the show. People are paying money like to watch them. And, you know, you can't even get the bare necessities, like you said. It's kind of disappointing. You know, I don't even know if Stephen Ross like really likes tennis. I think he's just a businessman.
Yeah. And I mean, especially when you come from somewhere like Indian Wells, where like that location is a tennis center. It's set up for tennis. That's going to be a great location to play at. And so I think when you go for the comparison from a great spot to play to a spot where they're cutting all the costs and it isn't very fun to play at, like that's obviously going to be a harsh wake up.
Oh yeah. It didn't help how humid it was too. You saw a couple of people, dude, I watched the Jari Draper match. Those two guys were gassed in the third set. Like, it was just visibly uncomfortable watching them because after every point, they would just slump over their racket, put their head down and just drip sweat. And you could tell Draper was absolutely cooked because he was up a break in that third set, couldn't finish it out, ended up going to a tiebreaker. And it was just whoever could outlast the person won. Like, it really, all skill and strategy went out the window. It was literally just who could stand the point longer.
I mean, they said the same thing about when Dimitrov was playing Hurkacz too. Just
really?
That he was completely out of that match. And then did you see what happened in that match?
No.
With Hurkacz? He slid into the net and lost a point because of it. And then because of that, Dimitrov was able to climb back into the match and ended up winning.
Wow, crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's a situation where it's like when that happened with who was it, Tiafo and Raonic? Sliding into the net is such a rare thing to happen that when it does happen, it immediately gets in that person's head.
Oh, I
know. They're just completely thrown off, and that's exactly what happened with Hurkacz.
Yeah, so he threw down his racket too.
Yeah, he's like, this
he was livid.
BS.
And it's pretty great call on the umpire, because I feel like it's kind of hard to follow that and look for that, because like you said, it very rarely ever happens. And he clearly touched the net.
Yeah.
Like it was a good call.
My guess is there's a sensor in the net, I bet.
Oh, and it just popped up on his iPad.
I would guess. I would guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you're probably not wrong, because there is a sensor with LETs.
Exactly. Exactly. So I wonder if it popped up that something had touched the net. And so he knew it was like his foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, and then Berrettini fainted.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. But he still finished out his match with your boy.
Jesus.
That's low key a rivalry. Andy Murray and Berrettini.
Oh, with Murray. Yeah.
Your boy, dude.
Not my match of the week this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of, should we hop into segments?
Yeah, I'm good. What's new in tennis? What'd you see this week?
Dude, biggest highlight, Djokovic splits with Goran Ivanišević.
100%.
So maybe that's his little personal problem that he was going through.
That could be it. I mean, that's definitely the biggest news of the week. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, these two had quite a run. From 2018 to 2023, 12 majors, 4-year-end finishes at number one. And, you know, he severed the relationship on Instagram, which is just so 2024. He has to post. I mean, not it's respectable. Like, you have to let the people know somehow, but it's just funny that Instagram is the, I guess, news outlet for people to find out that Djokovic splits up with his coach.
I don't think it really matters. I think it's really just he has to let the world know, and he doesn't feel like telling ESPN first.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he doesn't have a replacement yet, which is kind of crazy. He's even considering playing Monte Carlo. Nick Kyrgios style, aka without a coach.
I mean, at a certain point, if you're Djokovic, you're like, what can I learn from a coach? I wonder if the reason he got rid of Goran was he was kind of like, hey, man, you've helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, there's nothing more I can get from you.
Totally agree with you. I think, you know, obviously great run, but pretty disappointing start of the year. And Djokovic is the type of guy who, that's just not like him. So he's going to say, okay, where can I make a change? Coach, you know, maybe the relationship just ran its course. You know, I got everything I needed from you, and now it's time to move on, get fresh ideas, you know, fresh eyes on him.
Exactly. And it's possible he realized that it had run its course like last year or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like, when I stop seeing success and I start falling behind, I'm going to have to get rid of my coach.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Obviously doesn't win the Australian Open for the first time in a while, and then loses early in Indian Wells. And he's like, that's it.
I mean, still good friends. They always kind of had that fiery relationship too, where they would yell at each other on the court.
Mainly, I feel like one way yelling, just Novak yelling.
At him, one way. Yeah.
But yeah,
maybe we'll see him in Runa's box here in the next couple months.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised based on how fast Rune is with just getting rid of coaches.
Churning them out. What did you see?
I mean, speaking of Novak, he became the oldest number one in history, breaks Federer's record, which is pretty insane. And I wanted to bring this up because, like, with so many questions surrounding him right now, getting rid of his coach, not playing maybe up to his standard, I feel like I have to bring this up because he's still the number one player in the world. And like I said, last year he lost a couple matches earlier on, and then he went on to win the French Open and make the final at Wimbledon and win the US Open. So maybe it's just a slower start this year, and I think we'll have to wait and see where he's actually at.
Yeah, crazy. Just another Federer record broken by Djokovic.
Yeah. The one record that Federer's still holding on to that I want to see him keep is that Wimbledon record. And Djokovic is right there.
I know. I want to start using the hashtag not my goat. He is the goat. He's not my goat.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk betting, man. Who are you taking this week?
This bet is one where it's a little iffy because I'm taking Purcell +205 over Mickelson. And if we were to go on pure momentum, you would have to go on Mickelson. And you know I like to go on that momentum bet.
Right, right.
Mickelson has had some big wins recently, and Purcell has only won one of his last seven. So momentum all in Mickelson's favor. But this really is an odds pick for me. I think +205 doesn't accurately reflect how close this match is going to be. And I don't think it reflects the likelihood of Purcell winning this match, because we know that Purcell can be a top 40 level player or top 50 level player. And Mickelson hasn't reached that level yet. I mean, Mickelson is, I think, on the rise still, obviously. And we don't really have an accurate reflection of where he's ranked right now because he's only 8 months into his career. But I still think plus 205 is kind of harsh on Purcell. And I think it's a good odds bet in terms of the value.
Oh, I'm right there with you. I will be placing money on this. I'm riding Purcell. I like it. That 205 is juicy.
What about you?
So I am taking kind of a momentum play this week. I'm taking Shevchenko plus 160 over Berrettini. My thought process is Berrettini, while he's back, he's not back. You know, he's not into the full swing of things. Hasn't really, you know, won too much this year. Whereas Shevchenko is on the rise. This might be just an emotional bet too, but I love this guy. He is so much fun to watch. He's fiery. He's explosive. And I feel like we're going to see a older, you know, not as top shape Berrettini kind of get frustrated by this little kid poking him. And I think once plus 160 is pretty good too.
Yeah, like I agree. Those are pretty good odds. And I can't remember the last time Berrettini really won anything of significance. Yeah. So I think is a pretty solid bet given the fact that Shevchenko is kind of on the rise.
Sorry. Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised Berrettini's the favorite here.
Yeah. I completely agree. But how about match of the week? What'd you go for?
Dude, my match of the week was I went with my boy Jari defeating Saboth Wild 6-7, 7-5, 6-3. And this match was tense. So it started off just because there are two South American players. The tournament's in Miami. So both of them had very prevalent crowd presence. It was just the energy felt like a soccer game. I was watching this match on TV and I can hear the crowds doing like soccer chants, like, oh, and
then got the vuvuzela in there.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Well, the umpire constantly was like, please. Please.
Yeah, it's funny how the umpires, that's all they can say.
Yeah, I know. And they're like, Thiago, Thiago. But no, it was awesome. And it was tight in the beginning. So Jari, I think he missed the serve. And then Saboth Wild hit it back at him. And Jari wasn't paying attention. He was walking back. And the ball almost hit him. And Jari just stopped, turned around, kind of stared him down. So it was... That part was tense. Saboth Wild in the first set took a pretty bad fall, but it wasn't bad enough to take as long as an injury timeout as he did, which I feel like kind of iced Jari, got him cold. Saboth Wild ended up winning that set in a tiebreaker. Jari came back, won the second set, 7-5, close as hell, and then ended up taking the match 6-3. And the handshake at the end was just super brief. And even though Jari won, he still was complaining about, you know, all the noise that he had to endure during his serve. He was complaining that they were talking and during his second serve. He was complaining that Saboth Wild was taking too many towel breaks and the length of the breaks were too long. But it was just a fun match to watch. Watch it in its completion.
That sounds intense. I didn't catch that match, so maybe I'll go check some of the highlights out.
Yeah, check it. What was your match of the week?
I went with Dimitrov versus Zverev. Honestly, I don't think it was as entertaining of a match as obviously the one you were just talking about. But I think for me, what made this match really interesting was how much the serving came into play. Because while it was a tight three-set match that was 6-4, 6-7, 6-4, with Dimitrov ending up winning, they were so efficient on their serves. Dimitrov and Zverev, both of them. Zverev, though, it was crazy because he was playing worse throughout the match. Dimitrov was the better player overall for the entirety of the match, but the fact that Zverev not only hit 75% of his first serves in, but then won 78% of those points, just made it so that on serve, it seemed like he was almost unbreakable. And conversely with Dimitrov also made a lot of his first serves in, but on his second serve was way more efficient because, like I said, he was playing better if a point got into a rally. And it really showed how important that serve aspect is, especially in men's tennis, where Zverev was able to force a really tight three-set match almost purely based on the fact that his serve was really dominant. And in the end, Dimitrov was able to pull it out, I think, just because Zverev got tired and his serve became a little bit less efficient at the end of the match. And all of a sudden, he was hitting more second serves, and that gave Dimitrov kind of an opening to break him.
Yeah, I mean, this was a surprising one. I know you and me were talking before the match. I said I wanted Zverev. You said you wanted Dimitrov, and I was shocked that Dimitrov took it.
He's just playing at an incredible level right now. I mean,
right.
You look at Dimitrov's last few tournaments, and obviously he won a tournament this year for the first time since 2017. And he's made some deep runs at these tournaments. And he's just playing at a level that you just haven't seen from him in the last couple of years. And it, I think mainly is based on the fact that he's playing a little bit more aggressively. And he's hitting shots that he wasn't really going for, I think, last year and the year before that. And now he is.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to feel good if you're Dimitrov just kind of beating up on these younger guys other than Sinner, obviously. But just the fact that he is 32 and he kind of is grouped into that older generation of players and then beats Alcaraz, beats Zverev. Just good to see. I'm excited for this year.
Yeah. And I mean, when we talk about someone like Goran Ivanisevic and Djokovic, when you look at that period that Ivanisevic has been with Djokovic, 2018 is when that started, right? Dimitrov is looking at maybe Djokovic, and obviously it's tough to say that he's near Djokovic's level because he's never shown that. But I think he maybe is feeling a little bit of hope in the fact that, hey, this isn't 1980 where I'm a year from retirement. Mm-hmm. I maybe could have a couple more years of great tennis in me.
Yeah, no, the only comparison you can draw between Djokovic and Dimitrov is that they both wear Lacoste.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he's just going to draw some of the power out of that brand, yeah. But yeah. I don't know.
I like the Lacoste. Even looks good on Medvedev. Lanky ass. All right, and that's the show. If you're not already subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at Painting Lines Podcast. Feel free to shoot us a DM or email us any questions or thoughts at paintinglinespodcast@gmail.com.